I was thinking in regards to Thanksgiving. We've just celebrated it, and we have so very much to be thankful for, so much that we have it enumerated and alliterated over these days. Thankful for family, we're thankful for friends, we're thankful for the week, we're thankful for all the food we had that was more than we needed, and we need to go on crash diets between now and Christmas, and we're thankful for all those things, and it's a wonderful thing to be able to think about that. But as I was thinking about Thanksgiving and about really what God was at least expressing to my heart about it the day after, is this. Let me show you what I mean. Usually we think of Thanksgiving. Thanks for what you've given, and I give thanks to you for it. Thanksgiving. It's something we give to God. However, I wonder if this day after Thanksgiving, we might not think of that word in just a little different light than we have up till now. It seems to me that it's a very appropriate thing for us today to be able to say this. Thanks. Okay? Thanks, Lord, for all that you've given this week, for all that you've taught, for the fact that your Son lives in me, that his indwelling life makes it possible for me to live the life that you've called me to live. We've heard all week long about that. It's been a wonderful thing for some of us all term long. We've heard about it. Thanks. Now watch. Giving. Thanks for all you've done and all you've given, and now it is my responsibility to give what I have received. Jesus said it this way to his disciples in Matthew 10:18-8. He said, freely you have received, now what's the rest of it? Freely what? Give. Freely you have received, now freely give. Let me say it another way. Receiving implies responsibility. Receiving implies responsibility. It's a wonderful thing. We've sat here this week and reveled together in what God has given us. We've said, oh, what a complete salvation this is. How wonderful that Jesus not only died, but that he rose and that he lives, and that he lives in me and he makes possible the whole Christian life through me. This is wonderful. Jesus is in me. Jesus and I are together. Jesus and I can have a dynamic relationship together. And that is not period. That is beginning. That is beginning. That means, God, because you are in me and because you have given your life to me, I am under the responsibility to give what I have received. Now, in thinking in light of that, I'd like for us to turn to a specific way that I think God, in this context, wants us to be giving what we have so freely received. And I want us to look together at Colossians chapter 3 and verse 13. There goes our speaker. Do you get the feeling this conference is over? Colossians chapter 3 and verse 13. Okay? Colossians chapter 3, we'll start in verse 12, we'll read 12 and 13. Colossians 3, 12 and 13. Okay? It says this. And so, as those who have been chosen of God, holy and beloved, put on a heart of compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Now look at the verse. You have freely received something, and I have freely received something. What is it in the verse that we have freely received? We have freely received God's forgiveness. As God has freely forgiven you, so he says, in that exact same manner, you ought to forgive what? One another. As you have freely received, freely what? Give. Receiving implies responsibility. We sit here this afternoon, this morning, and we say, how wonderful that I've been forgiven. We like to think about being forgiven, don't we? I do. I love it. It's one of my wonderfulest things to think about. I love to think of being forgiven. We have songs that celebrate it. There is a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunged beneath that flood lose all their guilty stains. A cleansing stream I see, I plunge, and oh, it cleanses me. redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. Redeemed by the blood of the Lamb, redeemed, how I love to proclaim it. His forever I am. We love to talk about being forgiven. I love not only to talk about being forgiven, I love to know that I'm forgiven. It's such an enjoyable thing to say, oh, God has forgiven me. But I'll tell you something. I love to think a whole lot more about being the object of forgiveness than the giver of it. I revel in the thought of forgiveness as long as I'm receiving it. But when I come to the place in my own heart and life where someone has done something that requires me to forgive them, suddenly I don't like to think about forgiveness. It's no longer redeemed how I love to proclaim it. It's I'd like to give it to that guy. And so what I'd like us to think about specifically this morning is this. We have talked all week about thanksgiving. I'd like for us to think of thanksgiving in this way. Thanksgiving. And I'd like for us to think about it specifically in light of forgiveness. Thanks that I am forgiven. It is now my responsibility, and I have been given the ability to freely forgive. So in light of that, I'd like us to think of three things together this morning. First of all, I'd like us to think about what is forgiveness. And second of all, I'd like for us to meditate for a few minutes together on how Christ has forgiven us. We'll like that part. That's a fun part. And then I'd like for us, thirdly, to look at how we ought to forgive each other. So first of all, what is forgiveness? Let me simply say this. I believe that we often cheapen forgiveness by making it sound easy, by making it sound like it's no big deal, just forgive them. Just let bygones be bygones and just forgive. And let me say at the very outset that I believe with all my heart that forgiveness is nothing less than an absolute miracle. To be forgiven or to forgive is nothing less than a miracle. In other words, it can be accounted for only by the activity of God. Only God can really forgive. So we go right back to the things we've heard all week long. We go right back to the things that only God can do it. God is in me. Only God can do it. Now, before I go any further, let me say this. In my experience with Christians and in churches and in talking with believers, it is my opinion, I didn't read it anywhere and I don't have any statistics to prove it, but it is my opinion that nothing so cripples the church, so paralyzes the body of believers, so dampens our souls from the joy God wants to give, so hinders our expression of Christ than an unforgiving spirit. I really believe that with all my heart. I think there is nothing, let me say it again, there is nothing that so cripples the church, that so paralyzes the body of believers, that so dampens our souls, that so hinders our expression of Christ than an unforgiving spirit. How lovely for us to be able to sit at the end of a week like this and revel in what we've been given when God clearly teaches us that what we have been given, we are responsible to give. And forgiveness is one of the key things He tells us to be givers of because we have so freely received it. Having said that, we say, well, what is forgiveness? Forgiveness is not some cheap thing. It is a miracle. It can be accounted for only by the activity of God. Now, let me say this. Forgiveness is not smoothing things over. It's not saying, well, you know, they probably didn't really mean it anyway, so we'll just sort of let bygones be got bygones. That's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is not just overlooking things. Forgiveness is not just keeping quiet about it, not fighting about it. Families are full of that. Husbands and wives, children and parents, brothers and sisters, roommates. People working in the same staff and same body of believers are full of the habit of saying, boy, that person really wronged me, but I won't say anything about it. I'll just keep quiet. I just won't say anything. That's not forgiveness. That's not forgiveness. Just somehow trying to set it aside or letting people just drift apart without having a major confrontation, we often even mistake that for forgiveness. We just won't fight. We just won't say anything. We just won't bring it up. We just won't talk about it. That's forgiveness. No, it's not. That's not forgiveness. That's cheap. The world can do that. It doesn't take God to do that. Any worldling can do that. Any worldling can treat somebody who has done something to them that same way. It doesn't take God. It doesn't take the divine dynamic of God's work in us to do that. Anyone can do that. Let bygones be bygones. Just keep quiet about it. Just overlook it. Just let us drift apart. It doesn't take God. As I looked up the word forgiveness, I was impressed to find out that it's two things. And let me put it up here for you this way. Forgiveness implies two things. Number one, forgiveness implies, first of all, the canceling of a debt. And we'll put a punishment. The canceling of punishment. And when we think of that in light of what Jesus did for us, we think, yeah, we deserved death. We deserved to be separated from Him. But instead of having that happen, He canceled the debt. He canceled the punishment. He didn't give us what we deserved. Now, in light of that, as we think about it in forgiveness with one another, we think, okay, forgiveness then implies that I don't give you what you deserve for what you did to me. In other words, I don't give you the silent treatment. That's a way of giving people what they deserve. I don't pay you back by doing the same thing to you that someone else, that you did to me. I don't hold it over your head and punish you with it. We have all kinds of ways of punishing each other. We get angry with people. The worst punishment of all is silence. I think the very worst punishment of all is to withdraw yourself from that person. It's a way of punishing. So forgiveness implies canceling the punishment. You're not going to pay them back. You're not going to give them what they deserve for what they did. Number two, and I think the part that impresses me the most, is that forgiveness is to completely remove the cause for offense. Now that may not make sense to you at first, so let me explain it to you. In essence, it is the same thing as a mother does when she washes the dirt off of a child's face. She separates the dirt from the child. She says to herself, there's my child, and my child is dirty. And as I look at my child, I see filthy, dirty mud all over my child's face. And I don't want to see filthy, dirty mud all over my child's face. So I will take a washcloth and wash the dirty mud. I will separate the dirt from the child. I still love the child. I don't want the dirt, so I separate the two. In essence, what it means is this. When someone has betrayed you, when someone who should have been for you turned out being against you, when someone that you expected to be with you turns out to be against you, they've betrayed you, they've been disloyal to you, the tendency is to always see that person in light of that dirt. They and that crime are one and the same. You see them and immediately, I know what you did. I know what you did. I see it written all over your face. I know what you did. I won't give you what you deserve, but I remember. I see it. I remember. And immediately, when that person comes to your mind, that thing they did and that person are inseparably linked. That's together. I see you. I remember the crime. The crime and you are together. When Jesus forgave us, He completely removed from us the cause of offense. He not only did not punish us, but He took, as it were, let me read it to you this way. He cut away the wrong from the person. To truly forgive is to release the person from the act that they committed. It is a creative violence of love to reach into the unchangeable past and cut away the wrong from the person. It is to say, I look at you as if you never did it. Now I want to ask you a question. Can you do that? I can't. But then we've talked all week, haven't we, about the fact that the Christian life is not possible. That it is impossible. That God alone can do what He calls us to do. That's why I said forgiveness is nothing less than a what? Miracle. It's a miracle. It's not a cheap thing. It's not an easy thing. Let me say it again. It's not a possible thing. Humanly speaking, what we're talking about here is utterly impossible. But if we believe what we've heard all week, we must come to the place of saying, thanksgiving. Thanksgiving. Thank you that you did not punish me for what I have done. And thank you that when you see Kathy Boyce, you do not put all that I've done on me and see me and what I've done as a unit. You have taken what I have done and separated it from me. And you see me pure and righteous and holy in your Son. Now, he says, as Jesus has forgiven you, you forgive each other. So first we've talked about what forgiveness is. Now I want us to talk for just a few minutes about how Jesus has forgiven us. Because it's exactly what the verse says. Let me read it again to you. Bearing with one another, forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord has forgiven you, so should you forgive each other. I have a list of six things here that I thought we could look at together a little bit this morning of ways that Christ has forgiven us. And the first of these six is that Jesus forgave both friends and enemies. Jesus forgave both friends and enemies. Now let's think about that for a minute, okay? When a friend of mine does something to betray me or who is disloyal to me, after a certain amount of time goes by, if it hasn't been too huge of an offense, I probably could find it in my heart to begin to say, yeah, I know, we really are friends, we've got a lot going for us, for each other, but I'll forgive you anyway. But when it comes down to really forgiving an enemy, it's another story. Let me tell you a story, at least, that may help you understand what I'm saying here. There is a story about a man during World War II. His name was Simon Wiesenthal, and he was a prisoner in a German concentration camp in Poland. And the Germans were renovating a barn into a makeshift hospital. And his work duty was to go and to carry rubbish out of the barn and to help remodel and refurbish the barn into a hospital. One day he was working out there by the barn, and a nurse came to him and took him by the hand and began marching him off to where some of the sick people were. And she says, there's a man who needs to see you. There's a man here who needs to see you. So Wiesenthal, not knowing what was happening, was taken by the nurse to a young SS German officer whose face was bandaged with pus-soaked rags. And he looked at the man knowing that he was soon to die. He was probably only 21 years old or so and knew he was facing death. This SS German officer looked into the face of the young Jewish man who was in a concentration camp and took a hold of his hand and he said, I had to talk to a Jew. Said, I had to talk to a Jew. Wiesenthal looked back at him and said, why? He said, and he began to unravel a horrible tale. He said, he began to recount his childhood, how he was just like any other kid, how he got taken into the whole Nazi thing and was taken up with Hitler, how he got into the army, how he became an SS officer. Then he said, we were not very long ago burning a house full of Jews. We got a whole bunch of Jews inside of a house, and we torched the house and burned it. And he says, as the house began crumbling and burning and crashing down, he says, the Jews began running every direction, little children and old grandmothers and fathers and parents and families. He says, do you know what we did? Wiesenthal looked at him and said, what? He says, we murdered them all. He said, we took our guns and we cut every one of them down. He says, we mass murdered every one of them. Those that didn't burn, we killed. And then with tears, in the one eye that was still there, he looked at Wiesenthal. He grabbed his hand and he said, I must be forgiven. He said, please forgive me. I must be forgiven by a Jew. Let me read to you what happened. Wiesenthal listened to the dying man's story. First the story of his innocent youth, and then the story of his participation in evil. And at the end, Wiesenthal jerked his hand away and walked out of the barn. No word was spoken. No forgiveness was given. Wiesenthal would not, could not forgive. But he was never sure he did right. And the rest of his life, it haunted him. He wrote the story later, wondering if he had done the right thing. Jesus forgave not only his friends, but his enemies. Romans 5:10 says, yet while we were yet what? Enemies, he forgave us. He died for us while we were enemies of his. He forgave us. Secondly, Jesus forgave great offenses. And I underline the word great. I've heard many times people say things to me like this. I could forgive him for everything but. Have you ever felt that way? For everything but that. I used to sit in a counseling office hours on end, and I used to hear people come in. And I remember one lady coming in specifically whose husband had left her and left her with the children and had gone off with another woman. And she looked at me and she said, I could forgive him. I could forgive him for leaving. I could forgive him for being dissatisfied with me. I could forgive him for separating from me, but I can never forgive him. Never forgive him. When I realized that all the while he was home, all the while he was there with us, he was really with that other woman at the same time. I could never forgive him for that. I want to ask you a question. Is there anything in your heart this morning that you're saying, I could forgive him for anything, but I could never forgive him for that? Jesus forgave us great offenses. When I think about that, I'm reminded every time of Isaiah 53. Surely he hath borne our griefs and carried our sorrows. For our iniquities, he was beaten, he was scourged, he was smitten, he was crucified as a lamb that was led to the slaughter, yet dumb before his shearers. He forgave great offenses. Thirdly, Jesus forgave us before we asked. I've heard people say this too. Well, I'm not forgiving them until they ask. I mean, if they want to get forgiven, they know I'm mad at them. They know I'm ticked. All they need to do is come and say they're sorry. When they say they're sorry, then I'll see. I'll decide then. But I'm not responsible until they, what? Ask. That's interesting, isn't it? Because that's not how Jesus forgave us. The Bible says that even before the foundation of the world, so the Lamb of God was slain. Before we even ever sinned, he'd forgiven us. Amazing, isn't it? He forgave us before we asked. Have you ever been in a situation where someone has wronged you so terribly and they are so stubborn and so proud that they won't even ask you to forgive, and you say in your heart, then I don't have to forgive them because they didn't ask. They aren't sorry, and until they're sorry, I don't have to forgive. And even when they are sorry, I have the right to decide then. But until then, I don't even have to decide. Ball's in their court. I don't even have to think about it until they come to me, until they say they're sorry, and then I can decide whether I will or not. Wrong. Just as he forgave you, so ought you to forgive what? One another. He forgave us before we asked. Number four. He forgave us with all his heart. He forgave us with all his heart. Did you ever forgive somebody with half your heart? You know the feeling? Did you ever get involved in a situation with a person where you knew it was your Christian duty to forgive, and you knew you had to, and it really kicked you off that you had to because you really wanted to give it to them for a while longer, but you said, okay, I'll forgive you, but I will forgive you conditionally. In other words, all right, I won't hold it against you, but I'm never going to trust you again. That's really forgiving, isn't it? Or, okay, I'll forgive you, but don't ever ask me to help you anymore. Okay, I'll forgive you, but you're on probation. That's not forgiving with all your heart. Forgiving with your heart is two things. Forgiving with all your heart is first, not punishing them, and second, removing the offense from the person. And Jesus forgave all of his heart. Number five, Jesus forgives continually. Peter came to Jesus and he said, you know, Jesus, how many times should we forgive somebody? Seven times? because the law said three. Peter thought he was doing real good to go for seven. He said, how many times ought we to forgive? And he said, 70 times seven. Now, if you do any quick math, that's 490 times. 490 times. I know in my own heart there have been times I've said, I have forgiven that person and forgiven that person and forgiven that person, and I am not going to forgive them anymore. They're taking advantage of me. I'm not going to keep on forgiving. Well, obviously, when Jesus said 70 times 7, he didn't mean count 490 times. Although, even if you did that, you probably had never run out of forgiveness as you had to give. What he meant is God is the constant source of forgiving. And many times we say to people, okay, I'll forgive them, but they better not ever do that again. I'll forgive them, but if they ever do that again, it's over. One more time, that's all you get with me, one more time. 1 John 1:9 says this, if we confess our sins, he is what? Faithful and just to, do you know what the word is? Keep on forgiving. Keep on forgiving. If we are, he is faithful and just. If we confess our sins, he is faithful and just to keep on forgiving. Jesus does not ever, ever come to you and I and say, okay, that is your last forgiveness. I'll forgive you this time, but don't you ever do that again. I want you to know you've reached the absolute limit of my forgiveness. We're up to 469 times. And you've just about pushed it one too many. No. So Jesus forgives continually. And number six, Jesus forgives graciously. I was interested and amused in Major's story the other night that he told when we were down at the Methodist church about the two little brothers that were fighting all day, remember? And how he said, all right, I forgive you, but if you're awake in the morning, I'll kill you. Remember? And obviously, that is not forgiving graciously. When I think of forgiving graciously, the story that came to my mind immediately as I thought about that was Jesus with the woman at the well. I mean, with the woman caught in adultery. And the Pharisees bring her in and throw her down at his feet and say, what will you do with this woman? She was caught in the very act. And you remember that after he had thoroughly embarrassed all the Pharisees for their sin and they went kind of slinking away, Jesus looked graciously into the woman's eyes and he didn't say, now look, lady, you're lucky I didn't give it to you. You know, you could have died. You know, you deserved it. He didn't say, you know, I can't believe you would do that. Here you are. You're a Jew and you have God's law and here you just intentionally go off and sin. I am thoroughly disappointed in you. I cannot believe you would do that. He didn't do that, did he? Remember what he did? He graciously looked into the eyes of that woman and said, go and sin no more. He didn't even scold her. He didn't even put her in her place. He didn't even use the chance for one last stab, one last thrust of the sword. He didn't do it at all. He just said, go and sin no more. Graciously. He graciously forgave. Well, thanks. Giving. Isn't it wonderful to know we've been forgiven like this? Think of it. Do you revel in your forgiveness? I do. Remember the song? There's a fountain filled with blood, drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunged beneath that flood lose all their guilty stains. We've been forgiven like this. Enemies forgiven. Great offenses. Before we ask, with all God's heart, he continually forgives us. And he graciously forgives. Let me read the verse to you again. Bearing with one another and forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone, just as the Lord forgave you, so also should you. Well, let's look at number three. We've looked at what forgiveness is, and we've looked at how Jesus has forgiven us. Let's look now at number three, how we ought to forgive each other. I'd like for you to leave your hand in Colossians, but go with me for a moment over to Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. Matthew chapter 18. And I want to just read this parable to you. I think it's so self-explanatory that I hardly have to say a word about it. But let's just read it together, okay? Matthew chapter 18. And we'll start in verse 21. And Peter came and said to him, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? And Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. For this reason, the kingdom of heaven may be compared, now here goes the story, to a certain king who wished to settle accounts with his slaves. And when he began to settle them, there was brought to him one who owed him 10,000 talents. But since he did not have the means to repay, his Lord commanded him to be sold along with his wife and children and all that he had and repayment to be made. The slave, therefore, falling down, prostrated himself before him, saying, Have patience with me and I'll repay you everything. And the Lord of that slave felt compassion and released him and forgave him the debt. But the slave went out and found one of his fellow slaves who owed him 100 denarii. Now, in comparison to what he owed, it was 1/2,000th of the debt that he owed. He went out and found somebody who owed him 1/2,000th. It'd be like $2 to $2,000 difference. And he found a man who owed him that much, and he seized him, and he began to choke him, saying, Pay back what you owe! So the fellow slave fell down and began to entreat him, saying, Have patience with me, and I will repay you. He was unwilling, however, and went and threw him in prison until he should pay back what was owed. So when the fellow slaves saw what had happened, they were deeply grieved and came and reported to their lord all that had happened. And then, summoning him, his lord said to him, You wicked slave, I forgave you all that debt because you entreated me. Should you not also have had mercy on your fellow slave, even as I had mercy on you? And his Lord, moved with anger, handed him over to the torturers until he could repay all that was owed him. So shall my heavenly Father also do to you if each of you does not forgive his brother from his heart. That's a scary story. That is a scary story. A man owed a king a tremendous amount of money. He owed so much that if he had sold his own life and his children's lives and everything that he owned, he could not have repaid it. So he begged for mercy. He said, Give me mercy, please. Give me mercy, I pray. And the king said, All right, I will. I will cancel your debt. You're forgiven. And he went out of the king's presence joyous in the fact that he was forgiven. An object of forgiveness. Oh my, how he loved it. No sooner did he get away than he saw a man who owed him 1/2,000th of what he had just owed. And he said to the man, he seized him and he began to choke him and he said, Pay me back, pay me back, pay me back. The man said, I don't have it now, but I will, I promise I will. He says, No way. He took him and threw him into jail. And so the king, who found out, came to him and he said, Why? You had been given so much and you refused to give. Freely you had received, but freely you did not give. And the scary part of that story to me is the end. It says that he turned him over to torturers until his debt could be repaid. I'm not real sure what that means, except that somehow the man ended up being an eternal loser for holding back what God had so freely given. I'd like for us to think for a moment about two things in terms of forgiveness, of forgiving each other. One thing I'd like us to think about is this. Forgiving does not degrade us. It ennobles us. Now let me talk a moment about that with you. I'm afraid that often we feel like if I forgive, I look like a sap. I mean, if I forgive, it looks like I'm the loser. If I say, well, you did that to me, but I'll forgive you. Somehow they won, and we lost. and the contest is over. And they walk away saying, there, I did it, and I got away with it, and it was fine. I didn't even have to suffer for it. And there's this sense in our hearts of saying, no, you won't get away with it. It puts us down. We feel like if we forgive, it would put us down. When in fact, the very opposite is true. Let me tell you a quick story that helps me think about this. One time after World War II, when Germany was very, very poor, there was a little orphan boy standing out in front on a Sunday morning of a bakery shop. And as he stood in front of that bakery shop, he looked in and he saw him making these homemade donuts and homemade bread and stuff in there. And he was just so hungry, he could hardly stand it. And he peered, pressing his nose up against the window and smelling that bakery smell come out. And not too long after he was there, a Jeep came by with an American soldier in it. And the American soldier jumped out and he was going to run into the bakery and get something to eat. And he saw the little boy standing there. And he stopped and looked at him, and he realized what was happening, that the kid didn't have any money, that he was hungry, that he really wanted something to eat. So he went inside the bakery, and he bought a dozen fresh baked hot donuts. And he came outside, and he walked up to the little kid, and he handed him the whole bag of donuts. And the little kid, just his eyes just got just like this. He says, wow, thank you. And the soldier said, you're welcome. And he walked away, and he was walking down the street to get back in his Jeep. And as he walked down the street to get back into his Jeep, suddenly he felt a tug at his sleeve. And he turned around and looked, and there was the little boy. And listen to what he said. He looked up into the eyes of the soldier, and he said, excuse me, sir. He said, are you God? Excuse me, sir. Are you God? Do you know what happened? The man had expressed the characteristic of God in such a way that God had been lifted up. And as God was lifted up, people's hearts were drawn to him. And he said, excuse me, sir, are you God? When we forgive each other like Christ has forgiven us, others could look at us and say, excuse me, are you God? No, I'm not, but he lives in me. And my free expression of his life through me to you is the whole reason I'm on earth. And to hold that back is to hide the very truth that God has given me, the very life that's in me, the very purpose for my existence. Forgiving does not degrade you. It ennobles you. It causes you to be expressing the image of God to people. It doesn't make you less. It makes you more. It doesn't make us losers, it makes us winners. Excuse me, but are you God? When we hold forgiveness back and our hearts become hard and we act just like the heathen do, no one would ever mistake us for having the character of God in us. They could easily look at us and say, they're no different than me. Forgiving does not degrade you. It ennobles you. It lifts us up. It makes us image bearers of God. It makes us people who truly express the characteristics of God. And let me say this. We have heard all week long this week that God is in us and that it is a wonderful privilege of ours to express the image of God. But let's get practical about it. Let's bring it right down to where we live. What about roommates with roommates? Husbands with wives? Children with parents? You might say, yeah, but if you only knew. Wait a second. Let's go back to how Jesus forgave. Great offenses. Before people asked. Continually. With all his heart. Graciously. But if you only knew how many times. If you only knew how awful it was. It's a miracle. Forgiveness is a miracle. Only God can do it. Number one, forgiving does not degrade us. It ennobles us. Secondly, forgiving frees us. Forgiving frees us. Sometimes we get feeling like forgiveness is a jip. I mean, it's almost like our hatred is our last ace in our hand. The last way we have to punish that person, the last way we have to make them sorry, The last way we have to pay them back for what they did, the last thing we have and the only thing we have is a heart of hatred or revenge or unforgiveness. Maybe we wouldn't even be so bold as to say hatred, although that's what it is. We'd just say unforgiveness. And we say things like this: I just won't talk to them. I just won't be around them. I just won't have anything to do with them because they'll suffer. They'll suffer. I'll make them suffer for what they did. They'll be sorry. Every time they get around me, they'll know that I'm mad. And every time they get around me and they know that I'm mad, they'll be sorry. And I'll punish them forever for what they did. Let me say this. The only alternative to forgiveness is revenge. The only alternative to forgiveness is revenge. And revenge, listen to it, glues us irrevocably to the past. Let me say it this way. I've had times in my own heart where people have betrayed me, where people have been disloyal to me, and I chose revenge instead of forgiveness. And here's what happens. Every time that person comes, or every time a circumstance comes about that reminds me of what they did, the scene comes through my mind again. And I go through it again. In my mind, I go right through exactly the same things that happened again. And the same anger, and the same hurt, and the same frustration, and the same agony goes through my soul that went through the very first time. Because revenge glues you to the past. Every time it comes up, you go through it again. And it comes up, and you go through it again. And it comes up, and you go through it again. And it comes up, and you go through it again. It's an endless cycle. Revenge takes you constantly to the past. It takes you back to what happened, and you replay it over and over and over and over again. The only trouble is this. Revenge never, never evens the score. Because what happens is the other person gets into revenge, so you revenge their revenge, and on we go, and it escalates. Actually, if you want to know the truth, the whole thing that we're living in with this nuclear age and the Holocaust that's at our doorstep is nothing but an escalated form of this. I mean, it starts out little seeds in the heart of man, and we see it now in its grand ramification through however many thousands of years of human history in nations. But it starts in the hearts of people. It starts in you and me. And we can have little tiny nuclear wars between us where the end is ultimate destruction. And revenge is the only alternative to forgiveness. You either will have a heart that is paying people back, or you will have a heart that A, does not punish them, B, separates what they did from them forever, sets them free. The best story that I know of to illustrate this is a story I heard about Corrie Ten Boom once. And I'd like to just read it to you because I think it's the best way to explain it. And let me just share with you how it goes. Corrie Ten Boom was stuck for years, war years, in a concentration camp. She was humiliated and degraded, especially in the delousing shower where the women were ogled over by the leering guards. But she made it through that hell, and eventually she felt she had, by grace, forgiven even those fiends who guarded the shower stalls. So she preached forgiveness for individuals, for all of Europe. She preached it in the United States. She preached it in Holland. She preached it on Sunday. She preached it on every day of the week. She preached it in Munich. One Sunday, after a message, after a sermon, greeting people, she saw a man come toward her, hand outstretched. "Ja, Fraulein, it is wonderful that Jesus forgives us all our sins, just as you say." She suddenly remembered his face. It was the leering, lecherous, mocking face of an SS guard who stood over her at one of those shower stalls. Her hand froze at her side. She could not forgive. She thought she'd forgiven all, but she could not forgive when she met that guard standing in the solid flesh in front of her. Ashamed, horrified at herself, she prayed, "Lord, forgive me. I cannot forgive." And as she prayed, she felt forgiven. accepted in spite of her shabby performance being a famous forgiver. Her hand was suddenly unfrozen, the ice of hate melted, her hand went out, she forgave as she felt forgiven, and I suspect she would not be able to sort out the difference. The amazing thing is this. When you forgive, listen carefully, when you forgive, you set a prisoner free, and you find out the prisoner was you. When you forgive, you set a prisoner free, and you find out the prisoner was you. There's a song or a phrase that goes like this. Free at last, free at last. Thank God I'm free at last. If you and I choose to be recipients of God's grace, and then we refuse to let it go from us to others, we cheat ourselves and the whole world of the purpose of Christianity. Let us not sit here smugly at the end of a week like this and say, how wonderful that we've been so bountifully given all that we've been given. Isn't Thanksgiving wonderful? Isn't it fun to say, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for all you've given to me? Never, ever forget that receiving implies responsibility. And that as you and I have been given, we are to freely, what? Give. Just as Christ forgave you, so ought you to forgive each other.